think I want to start tonight by telling you all a quick story. In 1932, Amelia Earhart completed the first solo transatlantic flight by a woman and became only the second person to make the flight, period. She did it in NR7952, her beautiful Lockheed Vega. Now, I love all of Earhart's famous planes, and even though it may not be the most famous one, it's my personal favorite and has been since I was a kid. During our visit to the Smithsonian a few years ago, I remember standing under it while my wife snapped a picture. "Now look at me and smile," she said, as she snapped a picture that continues to hang in my office to this very day. We stood under it together after the picture and just enjoyed being in the same space as something Amelia loves so much. It was real. We could touch it. "Can you believe we made it here?" she asked. I couldn't. We were never supposed to make it past the first few episodes of the show, and now we're standing in air and space in Washington, D.C., and we'd already shot several guests for the documentary across the country before that point. I looked up, standing under that wing, thinking it was the most beautiful piece of winged machinery I'd ever laid eyes on. For nearly a century, Amelia Earhart's name has lived in two worlds at once. One is made of headlines and legend, the kind of stuff that turns a woman into a symbol, and then turns that symbol into a battleground. The other one, though, is quieter, heavier, more honest. It lives in archives, in carefully preserved artifacts, in labels written by steady hands, in collections protected not for what we want to believe, but for what we can actually prove. Because if there's one thing this case has taught me, it's that the mystery doesn't survive on a lack of answers. It survives on noise, uncertainty sold too quickly, on the comforting illusion that the truth must be simple or cinematic, or just one big discovery away. But Amelia wasn't simple, and the story she left behind isn't either. Tonight, we're sitting down with someone who has spent a lifetime living in the space between the myth and the material, between the public story and the private record. She's one of the most trusted voices in American aviation history, a Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum curator whose work has helped preserve and interpret the artifacts that define how the world remembers flight. And when it comes to Amelia Earhart specifically, she's not approaching this from the outside looking in either. She spent decades stewarding the very things people argue about on boards: general aviation history, flight material, aerial cameras, and the story of a woman in aviation as a living, breathing timeline, not a highlight reel. In other words, when she speaks, the room gets quieter. Because she's not here to sell us a theory, she's here to bring us back to the only thing that has ever deserved the steering wheel in this case: the woman and the record. And that matters because right now the Amelia Earhart conversation is loud again. New expeditions, new claims, new finally solved declarations are running laps around the internet right now. But before we sprint toward whatever comes next, we need to do something most people skip. We need to slow down. We need to ask what the evidence can actually carry. We need to separate story from storytelling. And we need somebody who knows the difference. She's devoted more than 40 years to collecting and preserving aviation artifacts, not just to keep them safe, but to make sure the stories behind them are told responsibly, in a way that educates and inspires, instead of misleading and inflaming. But that kind of work doesn't make you famous in the way the internet understands fame. It makes you foundational. It makes you the person future historians cite, the person documentaries call when they want to get it right, the person you bring in when the legend gets so big that the truth struggles to breathe. Oh, and something really cool. You've heard me talk about my original 25, the list I made when I sat down to begin this project so long ago. Well, not only was she on my original 25, she was number one. How about that? So, if you've ever wanted to hear what this case sounds like when the noise lowers and the facts step forward, tonight is your night. And we have one hell of an instructor. Welcome back to Chasing Earhart. From Washington, D.C., by way of the Smithsonian Air and Space, this is Dorothy Cochran. And we are live, Miss Dorothy Cochran. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Absolutely. I will begin tonight by asking everybody that will be listening to this to check the show's notes. We'll, of course, have a link to your original appearance on the show alongside Tom Crouch. That was 7 years ago, almost to the night. Isn't it funny how that works? Seven years ago.
I was trying to remember and said, I know we did this, but I don't know when. 7 years. Yeah. Wow.
7 years. It's been a while. We'll link it. I can't believe we're still doing this 7 years later. Listen, normally I would start this interview in a very different way, but we can't begin tonight without talking about the elephant in the room. We have a sitting president that called for the release of the Amelia Earhart files, and we've had three or four batches now that have come out and that are now public, something this case has been asking for many, many years. What did you think when you first heard / saw that news that the Amelia Earhart files would finally be released?
Well, I didn't know that they hadn't been released. As far as I knew, everything was available. At this point in time, I am unaware of anything new. I have to admit, I haven't followed everything that's been released. But for years, I've been telling people, everything's at the National Archives. At least most of it is online. So I guess I don't really know what exact files might have come out. Are people saying that there are new files? To my knowledge, it was all available either online or as an in-person researcher at the archives.
How do you guys deal with that when people come with new information to you nowadays in 2026? What do you say to new stuff that comes out?
Well, when people come asking about her life or her activities, you know, there are so many files and books and things like that that are available. And so there's a lot of good resources, both in the archives, National Archives, in the National Air and Space Museum Archives, and the Purdue Archives, which is where the bulk of the Putnam Earhart Archives are, and also the Schlesinger Library in Cambridge. There isn't a whole lot new that shows up that I'm unaware of. One thing that the museum has are oral histories that were done by Elgin Long, who was one of the primary researchers. And we acquired them from the Nauticus group a few years ago after Elgin's death. So many people are unaware of those, and people have found them and are really interested in what's there. So that could be considered new. But I have to say, there isn't much that I'm unaware of or that surprises me. Yeah. If it's a new idea about where she is, we will just evaluate it basically according to the facts as we know them. Then we just discuss back and forth in that realm.
There's so many theories in the news right now. It's interesting to see, sort of as an outsider for me, how everything comes together and maybe, you know, falls apart just as quickly. Do you think, is there a benefit to having several groups going down different paths towards a resolution to this? You have Purdue working with Dr. Richard Pettigrew, and then you have Nauticus going out there raising attention to their efforts out there. Is there a benefit to having several theories investigated here in a case like this?
Well, I think it speaks to Amelia Earhart, who she is. Obviously, the mystery is still there. It's something that is going to endure until her Electra is found or remnants, pieces of it. And so it points to her as a historic individual, and then the greatest mystery of the 20th and now 21st century. You know, these days, it's hard for something not to be figured out, resolved. It's fun to have people still thinking about her, you know, what's happened, that she's still in the public mind, that it is a great mystery. So it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good indeed. How do you, when people would ask you, how do you separate the woman from the mythology when you study her? She's got such this big, like, legendary lore now that kind of follows her around. How do you split the two?
Well, you talk about her as a person and as a pilot and what she did in her time frame. You know, her accomplishments, her legacy as a woman of the 1920s and 30s who really stepped outside the envelope, outside the bounds of what women were expected to do in the era. So she's got a great legacy, a great story to tell. And that's easy to just talk about who she was as a person and how she influenced women, aviation, the United States, you know, all these different things. The idea of, you know, what happened to her, that's an entirely different subject.
I just
separate them, the personal versus the disappearance.
When Laurie's book comes out last July, it gives us a sort of a different side of Amelia than we'd previously been exposed to. Now that the book's behind us, is there a version of Amelia Earhart that the public maybe hasn't met yet?
Well, I think if they read Laurie's book, they'll see some.
Yeah.
I mean, Laurie's, she did a terrific job. She's absolutely professional in her research and writing. We corresponded, we talked for several years. And I learned a lot of new things as well, because she'd gone into depth into research that I had never done myself, because she had a different purpose. And so it's been fun finding out. And, you know, we go back and forth. Do you think this is true? What do you think about that? Do you think somebody overstated that? Do you think somebody didn't like her? You know, so we've had all these different fun discussions and going in depth into more in depth into Amelia and George, of course, who's always painted, you know, as the bad guy. So it's been really fun working with her, and I just love her book.
Yeah, it's a good book. We'll link it in the show's notes. You know, the disappearance side of her life. It's funny, I've spoken with people who are following like in the footsteps of a parent who was investigating something in this case. What is it about it that continues to pull people in generation after generation? And we have we have young minds now, fresh minds, so to speak, looking at the case.
Well, it has to do, obviously, with the disappearance of a very famous person of the 20th century, literally off the face of the earth with no trace.
Yeah.
And this was someone who was a woman, who was a person, a worldwide celebrity, well-known pilot. Nobody expected this. They're following her, flying around the world, and then she and her navigator simply disappear. It's something that the public wants to know. What happened to this woman? It's the mystery and it's the lure of trying to figure out a puzzle. How the heck could this happen?
Yeah. You know, I've asked this question a few times on the show, but I think it's super appropriate to ask it again now. Are we in danger of the mystery overshadowing the rest of her life? So, you know, the disappearance side being so big that it sort of swallows the legacy. Are we in danger of that, do you think?
I think there's an element of that. But I think that when people start to think about where could she be, they want to find out more about her. So if they're drawn to the mystery, I think they will learn more about her. You know, in the public realm, I'm trying to think if there's anybody. There are a few people who are still alive who knew Amelia. I mean, her niece just died. But her niece only was 7 years old at the time.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
There's really no one who remembers her in their memory that they can say, I knew Amelia Earhart. I had an aunt who remembered Earhart coming to her town. You don't, you know, that just isn't going to happen anymore. So you don't have the personal aspect of it, but I think still the mystery will draw people into her just to say, you know, why is everybody still looking for her? Sure, she's missing, but you know, what was about her? Why would, what was she doing flying out there in the middle of the ocean anyway?
Speaking of growth, do you think, what do you think Amelia represents now that she didn't represent maybe 20 or 30 years ago? Is there growth in her legacy, do you think?
Well, I think so, because people keep writing about her. They keep finding, you know, new ways. They keep wanting to know more about her and really getting into archives and interesting discussions about her. She is not forgotten. Part of it now is that there are so many more women pilots, women involved in aviation. And, you know, who's the one that you think of right away as a historic woman in aviation? And she's the one.
Amelia Earhart.
A lot of great women pilots in the 30s, 40s, 50s. But, you know, unfortunately, their names don't pop out. Everybody knows still who Amelia Earhart is. So it's just one of those notes of history that is noted when you're looking at a decade or moments in history of the 20th century.
Do you think she'd be upset with that? Knowing now that, you know, so many of her friends, women pilots that were beside her, are not as, I'll say it for lack of a better word, but revered as she is.
Yeah, I think that would bother her. She always wanted to bring other women along. She enjoyed the company of the other women pilots, had some close relationships with some of them, certainly helped out many of them if they had dire straits, if you know, because she was exceedingly lucky, plus worked hard for the notoriety for her success. Even back then, she wished that more of them could have found success like she did.
As your role has sort of changed but stayed the same, are you willing to entertain any new theory that has brought your way that has, you know, what seems to be tangible evidence, you know, like we have what Dr. Pettigrew is looking at out at Nikumaroro, and then you have Nauticos in the deep ocean where we, you know, we have so many searches that are out there right now. What are your thoughts about that overall?
Well, my thoughts are that we need to follow the facts of the flight, mm-hmm. and the facts are readily available. And so I'm hopeful that people who are following the facts will find her. The Nauticos yeah. group has done an excellent job of following the facts as laid out by Elgin Long, and those facts are then in the archives, they're in the records, you know, all the different records about the flight, all of that is available. You know, I was listening to another podcast today when I was just kind of getting my feet wet again here. And
yeah.
just the thing that Elgin Long always said is, we believe Amelia.
Yeah. And
the facts are there about the flight, about the last moments, about all the details. And so that's why I tend to go with that, searching near Howland Island. We know mm-hmm. she was close to Howland Island. You know, the other theories, good luck, whatever, but they do not follow those facts. They don't give Amelia credit for yeah. what she was doing and what happened to her in the end.
Speaking on that, and I'll just throw the question out there. If one of those theories should turn something over that was, let's say, earth-shatteringly in the theory's favor, what do you say? What is your role? How do you handle that when that happens? If that happens, should that happen?
Well, we would also follow the facts.
Sure.
So there have been people who say they've found evidence of, you know, her clothing or her shoe or her mm-hmm. here, there, and everywhere. And none of them are conclusive. None of them are definitive.
Sure.
Should something turn up that you can say, yes, this is from Amelia Earhart's plane, or this is her radio, or this is whatever. Well, yeah, then obviously we have to look at that and we have to verify it. We mm-hmm. have to make sure that we understand the details surrounding it. If there's something that's actually, if there's real verification, definitive evidence, we will certainly yeah. look at that.
If you had to give it your best guess, why do you think Amelia Earhart is such a popular magnet for conspiracy theories?
Some mm-hmm. of that came when she disappeared shortly thereafter. And there
sure.
was a Rosalind Russell movie made. That was
Flight
a
for Freedom.
Yeah.
yeah. So, yes.
So then, you know, everything died down. Of course, you know, World War II came along. But then later in the 50s, I'm a child of the 50s, and every time you turn on the TV, there was some new movie about, you know, aliens and conspiracies and this and that and all the different, you know, dramas and things like that. So
yeah.
and then also there were people who thought they remembered things, but we don't know where or why they think they remembered some things. And
sure.
then the press and the public and everybody gets agitated and gets into it, but they lose sight of the facts, you know,
yeah.
And, so you have all the theories of UFOs and aliens and this and that. And people just enjoy that. It's, you know, it's a cottage industry.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. How do you think Amelia Earhart should be remembered in these times, you know, when all these different camps are out searching for her and racing at a resolution? What do you want the public to know about Amelia Earhart now in these moments?
People should honor her for what she did as a person, as a woman of the earlier 20th century, and the accomplishments that she made, and then the leadership that she showed and bringing along other women, other people supporting aviation. You know, she has this whole legacy and it's rich.
Yeah.
If we find her, then we can go back and just say, sure, we wanted to know what happened to her because she was so important. When she disappeared, everyone felt that something had happened. There was a loss. There was a vacuum. And she was only 39 years
39.
old.
39.
She had a
yeah.
lot more to give. You know,
yeah.
people often say, what do you think she would have done afterwards? You know, she would have still promoted.
Yeah.
She probably wouldn't have made these fantastic flights anymore. But I'm sure that she would nonetheless have gone on to, another portion of her wonderful careers.
Oh, it's my favorite question. It's my favorite question to ask and to talk about. Yeah, what would she have done? You know, would she have lent her? I think she would have lent her name, certainly, to the war efforts, especially when it came to the WASP. I think she probably would have yeah. gotten involved, even if just for being a face. I think that would have been really important. I think she would have definitely lent that to the cause that she cared so much about. I think she would have been lecturing like crazy. I think there would have been more books. I think I always tell people that there was a back half of their life that they were really planning on, you know, post-world flight. And not only that, but Fred Noonan had, you know, just started a navigation company. He wanted to, he had just been remarried, and he wanted to, you know, maybe have kids. You know, I don't know, who knows, but he would have wanted to have a, I'm sure, a really great life post-flight. So when it comes to the conspiracy stuff, I don't know that they would have risked that kind of thing, risked, you know, their lives post-world flight to get involved in something that would have jeopardized that.
Yeah, well, at that point, you know, I think if she had made that flight, if that had concluded, that mm-hmm. would have given them just a huge publicity boost. I agree with you about in World War II, you know, she and Jackie Cochran were very good friends, very close friends.
Yeah.
Jackie Cochran is the one, of course, who helped to create and led the WASP, the Women Air Force Service Pilots. So I'm sure that Amelia would have joined in that somehow, either in that exact one or a parallel, something going on in the United States to make sure that women were involved. You know, she was a pacifist, but nonetheless, I think she would have encouraged women to support, you know, whatever in any way that they could. And then, yeah, the books, the lectures. I mean, she always said that's how she made her money. You know, you have to, you know, women weren't paid for these flights back then. Men were often paid for them, but the women weren't. So she had to make her money on the lectures, on the book,
the
on
envelopes,
appearances, and then the side ventures, and, you know, things that she tried to do. She had her luggage line, the clothing line. She would have retired, I think, from some of that long distance dangerous flying, but she still would have flown around the country.
Probably.
Certainly made appearances and encouraged women.
Yeah. We'll just wrap with this tonight. What's next for you? What role do you see yourself continuing to play in this, you know, this incredible story that we seem to be watching unfold?
Well, I'm retired, but I am still a volunteer at the National Air and Space Museum. And, you know, I've been following this story closely, obviously, for years. And in fact, way back when Nauticoast actually first came to the Smithsonian and informed us of what they were doing. So I've known Dave Jordan and that group for a long, long time.
Sure.
I'm happy to continue to be a consultant or, you know, someone people come to, you know, to ask questions and learn more about her.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, I guess, unofficial with the National Air and Space Museum.
Yeah.
You know, there are others there who can also answer questions as well. You know, Tom Couch was, you know, preceded me, and someone else will, you know, will follow me. You know, I'm always happy to talk about her because she's got, you know, such a broad range and such a good legacy. And yeah, it still is the mystery.
Yeah, sure is, isn't it? Well, Dorothy, thank you so much. I appreciate you doing this.
Thank you for asking me. Enjoyed it.
This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to this episode of Chasing Earhart. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media, where we post each new episode as it airs, news, show information, and group discussion. Go to facebook.com/ChasingEarhart, and on Twitter and Instagram, search the handle @ChasingEarhart. Reviews are crucial to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please head to Apple Podcasts to rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Your editor and host for Chasing Earhart is me, Chris Williamson. The show is produced by my wife, Vanessa Williamson, with music by Dane Jarrus Schmidt. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Madhouse Films Incorporated. Madhouse Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All clips and audio used in the podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of historical entertainment and education, and no infringement is ever intended. Chasing Earhart is an exclusive trademark of Madhouse Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Madhouse Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Chasing Earhart is a Madhouse Films production. All rights reserved.